Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2002 and goes out every Friday afternoon at 2pm on BCFM 93.2. This week, Gerard McKay from Bolton talks about his miscarriage of justice. And also we speak to Sheila Tang, at least we hope to, because she's bringing her choir along from Easton. But we start this week, we're with Gerard McKay. Hi, Gerard, and welcome to Dialect. Gerard, can you just tell us in a nutshell what happened to you?
Well, Bolton Council brought a private criminal prosecution against me for unlawful harassment. It came to trial on the 4th of March.
Which year? Is that this year?
1994.
Oh, back in 1994. That's a long time ago.
Yeah,
so how come you're still talking about this one?
I found out later it had been brought with legal aid.
What, so the council actually used legal aid to bring a prosecution against you? What? Give us a bit of a background. Why did this whole process start?
Well, it was a private prosecution by the council for unlawful harassment.
Yeah, but tell us about what was being alleged. What were they saying was going on?
Well, I was convicted.
No, I mean, Gerard...
I rented a house out.
You rented a house, okay.
Yeah, and I was called... The person I didn't believe she was living there. Well, I went up to a victim.
Yes, and had you got all the proper papers?
No.
Why is that?
Well, I didn't know the rules or anything.
Right. So, I mean, you can understand why the city council would come after you, because what you're trying to do is get somebody out of the house without using the correct legal procedures, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was convicted.
Okay. And so, but your problem is what exactly? That the council used legal aid?
They brought the prosecution with legal aid. And legal aid is not available to bring such a prosecution.
Okay, so what have you done about that, Gerard?
Well, I reported it to the police and everything.
And what happened? And what happened?
They say it weren't a police matter.
Well, surely, you know, you would expect to get at least somewhere. And don't you think, in a way, maybe people are looking at this as saying, well, you know, actually, Gerard, you shouldn't have done this in the first place. You're the one that's in the wrong. And two wrongs don't make a right.
That's right. But there's a bit more detail. That's why I've created a website. It gives gives more detail to the information.
Okay. Are you still a landlord?
No, no.
Why? And what made you become a landlord in the first place?
Well, I'd bought it temporarily where I sold my other house, the house that I was living in.
Right.
And then I first rented it temporarily.
But I mean, why would the Bolton Council want to actually use legal aid?
Well, they can't use legal aid. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. Legal aid is not available. It was obtained and granted by fraud.
Okay.
In private prosecution.
So that's a big accusation to make against the local authority.
Well, this is why the details are on my website.
So what? Tell us a little bit about the details, though, Gerard. What excuses did Bolton Council use to say that they needed legal aid?
They didn't. I just, about a few years later, when I was told trying to... Because I'm still pleading innocence to this, I found out when I got the court documents for the legal aid bill, but the court documents are fraudulent.
Okay, well, tell us about your website then. Where can people find more information about this online?
Well, it's www.burycourtcorruption.org.
Bury Court Corruption, and that's B-U-R-Y.
Yeah, B-U-R-Y, yeah. Courtcorruption.org.
Okay, Gerard, thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Well, that was Gerard McKay, and now on to Sabine McNeil, who's joining me from victims-unite.net. Hi, Sabine.
Hi, Tony.
Now, could you just give us an idea of what you've got for us this week?
Well, I made the connection, thanks to you and your work on the Bilderbergers, Tony, between Kenneth Clark and what I call Child Snatch UK and Peter Britton as the hashtags.
Well, what's the connection? Because this is... Hang on, you've got to be quite careful making accusations like this.
Well, it so happened that I started Victims Unite by the four biggest bankruptcies that I became aware of or was made aware of, and we submitted them to Kenneth Clark and Vince Cable at the time. And what we discovered in what we call the forensics of legal fraud was, above all, the falsification of official documents.
Okay, so when did you make that submission? Because, I mean, you know, they've had a long career, these people. So at what point did you make that submission to Clark?
Oh, that's 4 years ago, roughly. I'll have to check again, but it's on the website.
So that is before the coalition government was elected?
Yes, it would have been, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what did you have in your submission and what came out of it?
Well, unfortunately, we were just fobbed off, which is what is kind of business as usual, I'm afraid. Huh? But and we had a few email exchanges, but they just don't take on board our arguments and our cases. It's a general either a treatment where you get sent from pillar to post, or it's not our remit, or yet another way of being fobbed off.
All right, so what conclusions do you draw? Do you think that some of the government officials have been covering up? I mean, this has certainly happened in the past, but we're led to believe now that the police are actively pursuing these charges and accusations of child abuse.
Well, maybe, hopefully, yes.
Well, I mean, you know, look, for example, this week we've had a conviction of Stuart Hall, for example. Certainly some people are being convicted. You can't deny that. And also, you know, witnesses from years ago who were at the time found that they weren't being listened to now certainly are.
Well, thank God, yes. But at the same time, unfortunately, the child snatching keeps going on.
So what evidence do you have for that?
Evidence? I have put together 6 pages as a dossier of evidence, which is just online, whether it's websites, blogs, YouTube videos, petitions, Facebook pages, Facebook groups. You go and on in support of our petition to EU Parliament. I mean, videos where babies are caught after one day after birth, by are taken by police, evidence for child snatching. Tony, I mean, as I say, 6 pages of links.
Okay, so what happens to these children? I mean, I know one of the main reasons is that they say that the mothers are unfit to look after them, but what actually happens to the children when they are snatched away after birth?
Well, the sad thing is the statistics, the official statistics say, Edward Timpson MP said, oh, when he was asked by an MP, the figure is low, only 50 children die per year. And his two all-party parliamentary groups made a report that 10,000 children go missing from care. So the rest, I know from one woman in Holloway that she was passed through 13 foster care homes. She was abused in 2. What happens to the kids? They generally suffer. They are certainly not happy in their foster carers. My big example is always this one family where the last baby was taken in prison, Tony, and the oldest daughter was molested by the son of the foster carers. The second daughter said they are taken to dark places at night where there are only men. And the third boy asked his mother at contact, Mommy, what is pedophilia? So you tell me what happens to these kids when they are in care.
Okay, going back to Kenneth Clark, though, yes, he's very big role in this Bilderberg meeting, which is essentially a linking together of banking criminals from the LIBOR fraud, from money laundering and others, along with arms companies and others that want to push for illegal war crimes in other parts of the world. So you submitted some documentation to him. And was it simply that he didn't acknowledge it, it didn't reply?
No, they did. There was an engagement where I don't remember the name of the person then in his department. And I got a whole bunch of us involved. I mean, us meaning victims turned starfighters who've been at it for a long time, who've seen more than just their own case. But it just didn't get us anywhere either. Ultimately, of course, you want either a change in law or a change in procedure or ultimately justice in terms of compensation.
Well, also, of course, more openness. I mean, this is one of the basic things about decisions made about, particularly about child snatching, you know, where young children are taken away. There needs to be some kind of openness about this. Are you getting anywhere with that one?
No, that's why we put in our petition to EU Parliament, and that's why the petition to stop the secrecy in family courts is still running. And we've just posted a letter to the president of the family courts, hoping to talk to him about that. He does want to make a change, a certain change, and he thinks it's revolutionary, but it doesn't go anywhere near as far as we want it to go and what needs to happen.
Okay, Sabine McNeil from victimsunite.net. That's victims-unite.net. Thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
Thank you very much for letting me be there, Tony.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
And Paul Fernie's here to take us on the latest leg of our trip around the universe. Paul, I think we left you at Saturn last week. I hope you've been... okay there, it's a little bit chilly.
Yeah, it is
a bit chilly.
It's good actually. I'm sort of hanging around Saturn at the minute because Saturn's got some fantastic features, also got some interesting moons, in particular the rings of Saturn. It's interesting to point out that Saturn isn't the only planet to have rings. All of the gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune, all have a ring system. The rings of Saturn, the diameter of the planet is 74,898 miles, which compares to the Earth's 7,923.
That's right, we were saying last week, weren't we? About
yeah.
10 times, and also 10 times the distance roughly from the Sun.
Yeah, absolutely. The ring system actually basically doubles this doubles it thereabouts at 155,000 miles with the rings. So it's a massive system of rings.
But what are they made of? This is, I mean, we touched on this last week, didn't we? What are they actually made of, these rings? We've had, is it the Cassini probe?
Yeah, the Cassini mission, which was launched in 97, basically was a probe sent to study Saturn in quite intense detail. It's currently, the current sort of theory behind where the rings came from was that a moon was destroyed many millions of years ago, and basically due to the magnetic forces, the gravitational forces around Saturn, the debris was squashed into these rings.
Okay, what destroyed it?
That's aliens possibility, always a possibility. Aliens are, you know, any dodgy stuff in the universe, always a possibility there's aliens involved.
So is it possible that it smashed into something? What would have caused a moon to disintegrate? I mean, moons don't do that, do they, really?
Generally not. I mean, you know, it's a theory that, you know, the Earth's moon was in fact the creation of a collision between a sort of proto-Earth and another planet that came too close and produced the moon. So it's quite absolutely sort of understandable if two moons are in the same orbit that they could collide and create this sort of debris field which the planet then captures.
But it's rings, isn't it? And I hate to interrogate you. Actually, I love to interrogate you.
Yes, you do, Tony.
You're saying that all of these gas giants have rings, so isn't it likely to be more... the characteristic that the planet is a gas giant that gives it the rings rather than some other, you know,
yeah,
maybe a collision or whatever.
It seems to be a characteristic of the sort of the makeup of these gas giants and the way that their gravitational forces interact with magnetic forces. I mean, you know, it's a known fact that Uranus actually sits on its side and the rings actually circle almost... It looks as though they're circling around its poles, but in fact it's around its equator because the planet's on its side. There seems to be a common theme with gas giants and ring systems.
Okay, so they're actually made of bits of rock. What are they?
Yeah, it seems to be bits of debris, bits of rock, ice particles as well. And they're incredibly thin, the rings are. Although the sort of diameter of them is huge, they are incredibly thin. Some suggestions, even as little as sort of 2 kilometres thick, the ring systems are.
Okay. On to the moons then. Titan's the big one. That's what's special about Titan?
Yeah, Titan is a really interesting moon because it's the only moon in the solar system that has a thick atmosphere or has an atmosphere at all. Now, when Cassini was launched, there was a probe on it, the Huygens probe, which in 2004-2005 was launched. And the Huygens probe subsequently landed on Titan, sending back pictures of the surface, and it also sent back recorded sound from Titan.
Okay, so Cassini actually sort of a little podule came off the side of Cassini called Huygens probe and down into Titan. So what did it find? Did it land okay on Titan?
It landed okay and took some fabulous images. In fact, if you go to the NASA website, there's actually a video recording on there showing the landing and the images that were sent back. It showed a surface that was quite interesting because the rocks that were on the surface were weather-worn and showed signs that they'd been in sort of some sort of riverbed at some almost like pebbles like we have here on Earth, you know, are smoothed by the motion of liquids, and I mean that sort of takes us nicely on to the atmosphere of Titan.
Yeah, we said last week, wasn't it, that it's nitrogen, rather like Earth.
Yeah, it's got a nitrogen-rich atmosphere, which there's only one other place in the solar system you find that, and that's here on Earth. So it's of great interest because astronomers and planetary scientists think that Titan represents maybe how the early Earth was many billions, millions of years ago.
So does Titan actually, I mean, it's the biggest of whatever it was, 60 or something moons, but does it actually go through the rings? Where is its orbit?
No, its orbit's outside the rings. It's quite interesting, one of the rings, which is called the F ring, the rings are named alphabetically moving out from the planet, is quite a thin ring, but it's actually shepherded by two moons either side of it, which sort of stop it from dissipating into the solar system.
So how's that? The ring is shepherded by two moons.
Yeah, basically there's one moon within the inside of the orbit of that ring and one moon on the outside.
So maybe if any of the debris hits one of the moons, it gets either chucked out into the middle of nowhere or else it has to stay within the ring.
Yeah, well, the gravitational forces involved mean that the debris never moves out of this ring, the ring's sort of orbit, so hence why they're called shepherds, because they sort of keep the ring in line and keep it doing what it should be doing, which is going around the planet and not disappearing.
So the Huygens probe, you were saying they took sound recordings. We're radio people. Maybe
yeah.
We should try and play some.
Yeah, we could do, actually, because they are freely available on the internet. So, yeah, maybe
Is it interesting? Boring? Is it sound
it's just... It's sort of a sound of wind, really, because obviously the Huygens probe sort of descended under parachutes into the atmosphere. And basically, yeah...
So the sound of wind, we can imagine that for the time being.
Yeah.
But, doesn't sound all that fascinating, but certainly nice to hear that there are other places in the universe that have sounds.
Yeah.
Not just here on Earth. Okay, other moons of interest, because that's only one of 60, isn't it?
Titan. It's one of 63. And the other moon of interest is called Enceladus, and it's the sixth largest of Saturn's moons. And it seems to have liquid water under its icy surface. Now, this is understood because it has cryovolcanoes at the South Pole, which shoot out large jets of water ice particles into the space above the moon. Now, some of this falls back to the planet as snow.
See, this is a problem, isn't it? Without a lot of gravity... These moons don't have a lot of gravity. You can have a volcano shooting ice and rock,
and
molten rock out, and it just sort of goes up in the air and
hangs
around.
I mean, again, Cassini's taken some absolutely fantastic images of these cryovolcanoes, with sunlight coming from behind so you can actually see them, and they do shoot miles into space.
Sounds almost like one of the places in to go on a solar safari or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
In years to come, I imagine large sums of money will be made out of going to... what was it called?
Enceladus.
Okay, but in the meantime, we have to look at the NASA pictures.
Yeah, in the meantime, look at the NASA pictures again on the NASA website. Some of this water falls back to the planet as snow, so it sort of snows on there. Some of it adds to Saturn's ring system, and some of it actually gets absorbed by Saturn itself.
See, you know, I've got a bit of a theory now, you've started me off here, that actually these rings are caused by this little moon chucking out all this interesting, weird material, and then it collects in the magnetic fields and hangs there in space.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's partly what does happen. It's not a weird little theory at all. It adds to the already sort of existing matter that's around Saturn in Saturn's ring system.
Okay, any more interesting moons?
The rest of the moons, really, the majority of them have prograde orbits.
Okay, what does that mean?
Prograde means that they rotate with the planet, so they rotate sort of anti-clockwise, which is normal for a moon, around the planet.
Okay, so the moon will normally go around the planet at the same... in the same direction as the planet is spinning.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a prograde...
Prograde motion, yeah.
And does our moon on Earth do that?
It does, yes.
Okay, so the abnormal thing is if a moon is going the opposite direction.
Yeah, absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And of course, if you've got a bit of both, you've got maybe the possibility of one might hit another one.
Yes. Normally, when moons are in different orbits, they can do two different things without there being too much sort of chance of them hitting each other. There is, in Saturn's case, there are some moons that share orbits at different distances, so they sort of follow each other around in one particular orbit. Again, some of the moons that have been found are as small as sort of 50 kilometres in diameter. You know, whereas, like I say, they do go up to the size of Titan, which is larger than Mercury and larger than our moon.
Getting back to the surface of Saturn, though, what colour is it, and does it have weather systems?
It does, yeah. It's much like Jupiter in terms it has weather systems, but they're not as visible because the majority, if you look at Saturn through a telescope, it appears mainly as a beige, a pretty boring beige colour. However, again, Cassini has taken images of very bright aurora. The poles of Saturn, again, these are caused by magnetic field and the interaction with the solar wind. I mean, obviously the amount of energy from the sun is somewhat reduced, as it's quite a lot further out in the solar system than Earth. But yeah, it does have weather systems on it. It doesn't have a giant spot like Jupiter does. But again, yeah, a really interesting planet. And a great one to see through a telescope or binoculars, especially when the rings are visible.
Is it very often visible in the night sky on a clear night?
Yeah, Saturn travels around the sun every 29 and a half years. So it sort of lingers through each of the constellations in the zodiac that we've talked about. Currently, as far as I'm aware, it's actually with the sun at the moment, so it's not actually visible. But I'll update you on that when it does become visible.
Okay, and next week?
Next week we're moving on to Uranus, or Uranus. Depends how you prefer to pronounce it.
I think I prefer the former. Thank you. Thanks very much, Paul Ferdy.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
It certainly is. And this is Dialect, our website, dialectradio.co.uk. Bristol's first podcast, which is broadcast every week, are on BCFM. And joining me is Jason Yannakopoulos. Jason, you don't have your usual copy of Private Eye this week. What's going on?
I've come to talk a bit about where I was last week.
Oh, yeah, because you weren't here last week. Where were you?
I was in London, actually, attending the autism show at the XL Arena.
Right, so this is a big arena. How many people were there?
Estimate certainly a few hundred, possibly even 1,000. It was in one of the conference halls there. It was quite an amazing event.
Okay, so what would you say? Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, but take us through it from start to finish. What was going on?
Well, it was set up by the National Autistic Society. And there were many stalls there, such as people like Autism UK, Autistic UK, formerly Autism Rights Movement. And there's
these charities always change their name, don't they?
Yeah.
For members of the audience who haven't really come across autism much, I mean, most of us have heard of it. What is autism?
Diverse, for one thing. autism is, I suppose, the... scientific way they always say it's almost like a a misbalance in the brain where there's sort of the sciencey, mathy side of it is going at double the speed of the communication side, which is James Clatter. But even then, autism is quite an interesting thing because it's in its whole spectrum. So you get autism, high functioning autism, and Asperger's syndrome.
Okay, so what's the difference between those two, for example?
Well, high functioning autism and Asperger's syndrome. Minimal.
All right. I mean, one of the things I know, autistic people find it very difficult just simply to write things down, don't they?
Yeah, I'm terrible with that, as you know. I very rarely bring anything written down because I tend to write stuff down and then leave it.
Yeah. So that's a symptom of it. But what do we know about what causes autism? Any ideas?
No, there's been a lot of research, and it was said a few years ago that autism was caused by two very scientific by having two very scientifically minded parents, but we're starting to see that might not be the case.
Okay. Anyway, tell us about the show. Was it just a sort of exhibitions, like a kind of high street with various booths, or was there any kind of performance?
There's very booths. There were some speakers in. There were three theatres. There's a main theatre and two smaller theatres. And there were some speakers there, including two TV presenters who had had two daughters, one of whom was Asperger's and the other one was autistic. So it was quite interesting. I really enjoyed that one in particular because it gave me a chance to contribute, saying about my experience, because one of the presenters said at the end that autism is something that can be embraced, which I always have done. It's rather than something that should be hidden away and something you should hide from. So with autism, should embrace that because, yeah, it can be a curse, but it can also be a blessing.
Well, that's nice to hear. So by embracing it, I mean, you know, you're saying that you've definitely bit the bullet here. You're not trying to dodge away from the fact that you're autistic. And how has that helped you to live your life with this kind of disability when you may have tried to deny that you're autistic? How has it helped to embrace it?
It's helped because it's made me feel more comfortable and more confident about who I am, and I can say to people, you know, I might think differently, I might see things differently, I'm autistic, but at the end I'm just quite similar to everyone else. I have been through university, I've got two university degrees, and my autism never stopped me. I mean, occasionally I found it difficult to focus, but I was quite interested in what I was doing, so it helped me actually focus my energies on actually getting the course done.
Okay, and actually doing exams must be quite difficult. If you're having problems writing, how do you manage with that, Jason?
As with any sensible autism person going to university, I made sure I had the appropriate support, and that is I was allowed to do it on a computer. I was given a room by myself, so I was kept away from the rest of the class, so there were no distractions, and I just said it was just me sitting with one examiner, and so that really helped me. I also got extra time, which can be both a blessing and a curse, because extra time when you're doing a 1-hour exam is great. Next time when you're doing a 3-hour exam is not so great.
one of the things that bothers me is when anyone's got a disability, is it? I mean, have you managed to get to the stage where people don't? I mean, I'm doing it now, but don't focus on your disability, but actually focus on you and see the person behind the disability.
Well, that's actually probably a good thing, because if they're not focusing on the disability, then they're seeing you as a person rather than as a, I don't know, a patient or like a weirdo. So that's quite a good thing. If you can get to that stage, it's a very good stage to be in. Of course, the problem is when you do something that is weird, some people might think, they won't think, this guy's an autism. They'll think, this guy's a bit of a weirdo. So that's the downside of it. But, you know, there's so much upside. I made an awful lot of friends at school, I made an awful lot of friends at university, which is quite rare for somebody with autism or Asperger's syndrome. But it's actually feasible. If you can gain control over yourself, if you can gain the confidence, there's not too much you can't achieve, if anything.
Okay, and what did you get out of the weekend?
Last weekend it was quite good, because for the first day I was there with my mother, and we went round looking at a lot of the stores, we went to some of the talks, and It was quite good because there was talks on things like advocacy, which means a lot to me because I advocate sort of autism awareness. There was talks on employment for autistic people.
I know. I mean, at the moment, you're having a bit of a battle to get employed, aren't you, Jason? I mean, I know over the last 4 or 5 weeks, some of the Tuesdays you've had to miss because you've been applying for jobs, but you get knocked back. I mean, this must be a bit dispiriting. How do you manage to cope with that?
Well, in a lot of cases, I'm just quite glad I've got the interview, really. I mean, the autism job that I applied for but didn't get, I was told that there'd been nearly 100 applicants and they only interviewed the best 10. So for me, that was quite good having got that far. They said I was an impressive candidate, but I didn't get the job because the person who did get the job was also on the spectrum, also quite impressive and had more experience than me in that area. So,
well, you sounds like you've got a fantastic attitude. Did you get anything else out? You said you went on one day on your own.
Yeah. No, I didn't go. I was there on my own. The first day I went with my mother. The second day I took my friend Stuart, who's he's only 19. He's quite a nervous chap, and he's always worried about having Asperger's and all that. And then we went to the speech where the guy said autism is something that can be embraced, and he'd never really seen that side of it before, so it gave him a lot of inner strength. In fact, I think he might have got more out of that one than I did, because I already knew it.
Anyway, Jason, wish you well. Continue in your positive attitude towards it, and I'm sure you'll get what you want.
Thank you, Tony.
Cheers, Jason.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
And I'm pleased to say we're joined now by a choir from Easton, that is to say specifically by Sheila Tang and also Carter Nelson. Sheila, what is your choir called?
We're called Easton Community Choir.
And how did you start?
Well, we started about 5.5 years ago, and I just thought, hey, I wanted to start a choir. I wanted to start a choir somewhere with a good community feel to it, and I'm very fond of Easton anyway, so that's kind of how it started, really.
And whereabouts do you do your rehearsals? Because obviously, it's quite a few. You make quite a bit of noise.
Yeah, yeah. We rehearse at Easton Community Centre on a Tuesday evenings during term time.
What about the repertoire, Carter? How do you decide on what you want to sing? Is it just what people feel like?
No, it isn't. It's what Sheila feels like. Sheila chooses the music, and we're usually very happy with what she chooses for us.
And what about you? What made you want to get involved? What is it about singing that appeals to you?
Well, I used to be in another choir, which was considerably more formal, you could say a bit stuffy, and I didn't like that. And then at a music workshop on a weekend, I met Sheila, and she told me about her Easton Community Choir, and I thought, that sounds like the one for me. So 2 years ago, I joined, and I'm very happy I did.
Okay, the first song's called I Will Rise Above. Tell us a bit about this one. Sheila.
I Will Rise Above. It's a kind of gospely song in the gospel tradition. It's about I will rise above my trials and tribulations. Very much like gospel songs. It's about overcoming this life and overcoming the obstacles in this life and the tribulations.
Okay, Carter, what do you get out of singing songs like this?
I just love singing them, and I really enjoy being with other people who are enjoying singing, and it's the most positive activity to do. When you sing with people, you feel close to them, you make social bonds, and everybody has a good time doing it.
Okay, let's hear that now then.
Keep on. keep on keeping, keep on keeping on.
Okay, and the second song we're going to do is Hannah, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, I'm sure. Hannah Ava Babanot. Sheila, where's this one from?
It's a traditional Israeli song. It's a Hannah Ava Babanot, and it's a love song, basically.
What does it mean? Do you know?
I do have the literal translation written down.
On the spot there.
It is basically a man speaking of his love to a woman.
When you choose these, I mean, we've just heard from Carter that you pick a lot of the songs. I suppose people might try and push them on you and say, we want to do this one, we want to do this one. And after a year, you might cave in. Does it work like that?
Well, for me to introduce a song and for me to introduce a song to a choir, I have to feel inspired by a song. So the arrangement has to inspire me. The song itself has got to have soul to it. So it's anything that inspires me, or anything that I think is a good song, basically. And that can be a whole range of songs from all different traditions.
Okay, Carter, do you like these Hebrew tradition songs?
Yes, I do. I like the song a lot. And I think it's improved for me greatly because I don't understand what we're singing about. I know the theme, but it sounds much more exotic in Israeli than it would if it were in English.
Okay, sort of Hebrew. Interesting. I mean, do you do quite a lot of this singing in languages you don't understand, Sheila?
I mean, I do all sorts of songs. I'll do African songs, I'll do Maori songs, gospel songs. And I think it's, I think it's good to learn about different cultures and to learn about different traditions and to learn about, songs from across the world.
You're almost kind of soaking it up, aren't you? Even though you're not necessarily understanding exactly what the detail is, you soak up that culture
that's
when you're singing a different
that's
language.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so let's hear that one now. That's
okay.
You better pronounce it though, because
Hannah Ava Babanot.
Ava Babanot there, Hebrew song with the Eastern Community Choir. I'm joined by Carter Nelson and Sheila Tang. Sheila, the last one that we're going to be singing this evening, Agora?
It's Agawa Bay.
Agawa Bay.
Agawa
what part
Bay.
Of the world is that from?
Okay, it's from America, and Agawa Bay is written in the Shape Note tradition, which are American folk hymns from 100, 200 years ago. And Agawa Bay is a place name in America. All the Shape Note songs are named after places.
Okay. Is this one of your favourites, Carter?
Yes, I like this song a lot. And we sang it on Sunday when Eastern Community Choir sang as part of the Eastern Arts Trail. And I think people really enjoyed it.
What about, do you have a season that you sing a particular, a bit like a football season, where you have a choir season, you sing a particular time parts of the year?
We sing during term time, so terms correspond to school term, so autumn, winter, and spring term, and then we have a good summer break off, and then we start again in September.
Now, you mentioned Art Week. Are there any other bigger concerts that you have?
Yes, we this year and other years as well have gone to the Big Sing in St George's Brandon Hill, and that is when about 12 choirs from the southwest get together and we sing all day together, and then in the evening each choir goes up on stage and presents two pieces they've worked on, and it's really good fun.
Okay, what time of year is that one? Because that sounds like one you shouldn't be missing, really, folks.
I think that was May.
Yeah, it's springtime.
Oh, we've just missed it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
What about big places like the Colston Hall? Have you ever sung in there?
Well, we haven't sung in Colston Hall, but St George's is, you know, pretty huge.
It
there are 500 people listening to. So, you know, it's a big performance for us. And, we went down really well.
For people listening who are interested in coming along, maybe having a listen to you and possibly joining the choir, how's the best way to do that?
So we are Eastern Community Choir. So we're www.easterncommunitychoir.org.uk. Or they can get in contact with Eastern Community Centre and they can give out details. But we start back again in September. September the 24th, we meet on a Tuesday evenings from 7:30 to 9:30. And we just sing for the fun of it. We sing mainly for the fun of it. And also, you know, we build community and we develop our musical skills at the same time. And just have a lot of fun, basically.
Okay, so we'll finish now with Agua Bay. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did. Well
Fantastic.
Done, Tony.
Here we go.
Come, let us join in cheerful song with angels round the throne.
'Twas the final song, Agua Bay, by the Eastern Community Choir. You can find them online at eastoncommunitychoir.org.uk. You can contact Sheila at Sheila Tang, SHEILATANG 68 at hotmail.com. That's Sheila, SHEILATANG 68 at hotmail.com. Or give her a call on 0117 965 8485. That's 0117 965 8485. Thanks very much to Carlton Nelson, Sheila Tang and the Eastern Community Choir crew for that lovely little concert.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Now, US filmmaker Alan Frankovich made the definitive documentary for Channel 4 about the Lockerbie bombing. The Maltese double cross was never repeated, but can be watched online. It presents compelling evidence of a secret motive for the US CIA to blow up Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie on the 21st of December 1988. Frankovich also directed a three-part Operation Gladio film for the BBC Time Watch series, which was shown to stunned audiences back in 1992. This film, a series of three films, documented NATO blowing up European civilians and blaming it on the Russians, the left in Europe, that is, the Red Brigades, the Baader-Meinhof, and even the IRA. Frankovich died of a suspicious heart attack in Houston Airport Customs Hall in 1997. And alongside the feature films of the Greek-born French filmmaker Costa Gavras, Frankovich's 1970s, 1980s, and 1990 early documentaries give us a deep insight into the criminal side of the Western intelligence agencies. These are MI6, the CIA, the Israeli Mossad, and NATO intelligence. All these secret political operations were deniable, but carried out under the secret orders of prime ministers, presidents, and royalty. Frankovich was interviewed in October 1982 by Alternative View in Austin, Texas, just after he released In Company Business, his film all about the CIA. Frankovich described the CIA as a kind of Rotary Club version of the Nazis' hated secret police, the Gestapo.
The CIA's been on company business for years, so what's been its job in France, Italy, Guatemala, Iran, Cuba, and the Congo? And what does Colby know, and Agee, Jackson, Braden, Nixon, Marchetti, Helms, Bundy, Stockwell, Church? And what about Truman, Ike, Kennedy? The CIA's been on company business in stealth. Now we find out.
Alan, someone that's working for this agency and seen all these revelations of all the dirty tricks and evil deeds done by the CIA must know that this agency is doing all of these things. And how can one rationalize this, or is it just suppressed?
Well, what they do, you see, you know, this is where for instance, they're trying to do everything they can to destroy the reputations of people like John Stockwell and Philip Agee. Because those people create such a bad example. So therefore, Philip Agee, they have accused him over and over again of working for the Cubans or working for the Soviets. John Stockwell, the same kinds of things. I mean, the senator from Utah hatched, essentially got into a discussion with him at a Senate hearing. Because what they don't want Americans to realize is that they have nothing to do with American patriotism. I mean, I can tell you that the people who are running the CIA now, if they had been in the American Revolution, they would have been running the British Army.
How so? I didn't get that.
Because they are on the side of manipulation. They don't believe in democracy anywhere, certainly not here and nowhere. They're not interested in defending anyone's real security. They're an instrument which defends certain very powerful economic interests, which are just as willing to see American workers fired if they're not going to be making money as they would to see Guatemalan workers killed. And that's the reality of it. And they've wrapped themselves up in the flag too long. Mm. You take a person like John McCone, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, on the board of directors of International Telephone and Telegraph, one of the founders of Bechtel Corporation. You look at his life over the last, he has not given a single drop of blood ever to this country. And he certainly made himself enormously rich. And you contrast that with the life of many other people it's gone through. And he, you know, appears in the film and justifies what they did in Chile because International Telephone and Telegraph was worried that their telephone company was going to get nationalized in Chile. And the Chilean government did nationalize it and compensated them for their book investment, in other words, their declared investment, $30 million, whatever it is, which they declare as the worth. They didn't feel that was justified because, of course, they were under-declaring what the real wealth was, so they wouldn't have to pay taxes. Mm. So they kind of got hoisted by their own little tax evasion scheme.
It looks like the CIA, then, is the massive hit squad of the multinational corporate system.
Yeah, I think that's why the film is called On Company Business. You know, it's interesting that the CIA, the people in the CIA refer to themselves as the company. Mm-hmm. And if you look at strictly, you look at, say, the world situation, the geopolitical situation, the United States has two, and now actually four major rivals. It used to just be the two major communist countries, the Soviet Union and China. The CIA has had never had any success at all against those two countries. In the 50s, they were parachuting people into Russia to set up guerrillas, and they all got wiped out the moment. China, the same thing. They've been extremely successful against Guatemala, against Iran, against Chile, against Angola, against any of a number of countries.
Although some of those backfired, like the Angola.
Well, a lot of them are going to backfire in the end, you see, because it comes down to, you'd really think, in the end, that you can control people by beating them down, by getting them mad at you, by making them starve to death and watch their children die at 4 or 5 years old. And in the end, I don't think you can, because in the end, if you're going to watch your children die at 4 or 5 years old, you're going to come out and fight. That's all you have. That's all you have left. And one of the great stories I like to tell is how James Angleton, the head of the CIA's counterintelligence corps, and this is the part of the CIA which is designed to protect the CIA from penetration by Soviet agents. Well, the highest level Soviet penetration we know of into Western intelligence, at least that I know of, is Kim Philby, who was a top British intelligence officer who was working for the Soviet Union for the last 20 or 30 years. He was stationed in Washington to be the liaison between the CIA and the British intelligence service, particularly on Soviet affairs. And Kim Philby at one point was in charge of these parachute drops into the Soviet Union. And of course, these people never survived. when he was in Washington, James Angleton, who loves the British, is a great Anglophile, he went to Yale University and thinks Cambridge and Oxford, he would have lunch with Philby about 3 times a week, and God knows what they discussed. I'm not saying that Angleton is working for the Soviet Union, but he certainly couldn't see what was right in front of his face, because this man was talking with a British accent, was browbeating him with a British accent, and so on. So here you have this great organization with 10,000 employees, and God knows what their budget is, because that's a secret. Going up and beating up, you know, people in Guatemala, which is no big accomplishment, really, considering the poverty there.
You mentioned a couple minutes ago that America had 4 major enemies, the Soviet Union and Red China, against those two. What are the other two?
Well, Japan now, in other words, because you realize the United States...
As an economic rival.
Yeah. But you see, the way they look, have to look at it at that level, it's rivals.
Mm-hmm.
If Japan is outselling, you know, if Americans are buying Toyotas here rather than Chevrolets, they're becoming a rival.
And Sony rather than RCA.
Exactly.
That was US filmmaker Alan Frankovich speaking on the Austin, Texas VHS video news magazine. That's how long ago it was, yes, VHS, Alternative Views, way back in 1982. And that's the final episode of that little series. And you can find Alternative Views on YouTube. They've got their own channel.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialect is a weekly podcast for your MP3 player, produced by volunteers and broadcast on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 2 p.m. every Friday afternoon. If you're online, you can subscribe to our RSS feed or email list, which will remind you every Tuesday evening when Dialect goes online. You can do that or download this weekly podcast from dialectradio.co.uk. That's dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks very much to our studio guests this week, particularly to Carlton Nelson and Sheila Tang, and all the collected voices of the Eastern Community Choir. Also to Gerard McKay and Jason Yannakopoulos, who we heard before that. Also Paul Fernie. Dialect is Bristol Broadband Co-op production, and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, do please contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733. You'll find them on the web at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. And that phone number again, 0117 989 7733. I'm Tony Gosling. That was Dialect. Wishing you a very good week. And thanks for listening. So until the same time next week, goodbye for now.
just getting in. I knock on the door.
Knock, knock.
A voice sweet and low says,
who is it?
She opened up the door and let me in. Never once do she say, where have you been? She say,
you hungry?
Are you hungry, honey?
Did you eat?
Yeah. Let me hang up your coat. The woman tell me, pass me your hat. Raises a voice. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, and I don't give it a second thought.
It's a thin line between love and hate.
Don't think you can keep breaking your woman's heart.
It's a thin line between love and hate.
And she'll sit back and enjoy it.
It's a thin
yes,
line.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Between love and hate, she gon' woo you one day.
The sweetest woman in the world could be the meanest woman in the world
if you make her that way.
You keep hurting her, she keep being quiet. She might be holding something inside that'll really, really hurt you one day. Hospital bandage from feet to head in a state of shock, just that much from being dead. I didn't think my woman would do something like this to me. I didn't think my girl had the nerve. Here I am. I guess action speaks louder than words.
It's a thin line.
You can keep treating your woman bad.
It's a thin line between love and hate.
And she won't ever get mad.
It's a thin line.
Yes, it is.
Between love and hate.
She's gonna fool.